Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick and co-host Dan Reese today for this week's By the Numbers. We're really excited to do this one. Dan, great win. I think it's one of the 15 greatest in team history.
Yeah, it was a huge win over a really tough opponent and just pretty much beat them on all aspects of the game. It was pretty nice and good to have a relaxing Sunday for once.
Sure was. A 1 o'clock game is nice to start with because analysis and crotchetiness set in early at my age. But yes, it's really nice to have a laugher as well. So why don't you start us off?
All right. So my first one is 16% and 3.5%. The 16% is the win probability added during the first drive by scoring the touchdown this week. The win probability went from 60% to 76%. So that really was a key to what we were just talking about it being an easy Sunday, is just starting off on the right foot. Compare that to the 3.5%, which was the win probability added from the two fourth down fails from the Chargers. That got a lot of press, but really when it comes down to it, they weren't that meaningful. The game was pretty well in already hand in at hand that point. So in the win probability measure, it really wasn't that big of a deal. Previous five games, the first drives have been four punts and one interception return for a touchdown. So pretty rough starts in all the other games. So, you know, it's definitely a challenge for the Ravens offensive coaching staff because they don't know what defense they're going to face, how people are going to come out against them. So it's really key to come up with a good game plan and, start off strong.
Yeah, it is definitely a hallmark of the 2019 Ravens to get on the board early. And Lamar had that remarkable record of having the lead some very high percentage of the times at halftime, which was driving the fact that he never had a second half comeback.
Right.
So it's very hard to monitor that. That's a really nice one. I'll give you another leverage related one. It's 32.3%. That's the break even percentage needed for the Chargers to convert that fourth and three from their own 39. So this was the first fourth down they went for it on. That's from PFF's expected win model, thanks to Eric Eager for these statistics. The same model estimates their probability to pick up the required yardage at about 56 or 57%. Differs a little bit by run or pass, but that's the approximate percentage chance they had to actually convert, and they only needed 32.3. So it really wasn't a close decision in terms of whether or not they did it. The right call for the Chargers, the wrong outcome, a very high leverage play still because, and not as high as you mentioned before, the Ravens' first score, but they had a 9.4% win probability with a punt. They would have gone to 13.6% had they converted, but they dropped instead to 7.4% for failing to convert. So they lost about 2 win percentage points on that loss, as you will. And you mentioned that between those two fourth downs, they lost, what, about 3.5%?
Yeah, 3.5%. Yep. So 1.5 on the other one, but similar impact. Yep.
Yeah, similar impact and a high leverage, but definitely the right decision for the Chargers.
Yeah, it was the right decision and, kind of a no-brainer. Same with the next one with the other fourth down. When you look at the win probability, it's very against historical, going for it on that that far of a goal line or that far of a yard line. It just weren't able to execute, and that was a big difference between this week and the week before against the Browns. So, All right, my next number is a part of the reason why they weren't able to execute. 11 and 15. Marlon Humphrey shadowed Mike Williams 11 of 15 routes before he left with injury. And during that time, he only allowed one catch for 1 yard on 2 targets. One of the targets was the fourth down. So he stopped Mike Williams on that first fourth down, which was key. Mike Williams was held to an average separation of 1.7 yards in week 6 compared to the previous 5 weeks. He had a 2.75, which is right around the league average. So Marlon Humphrey was covering him real tight. which is pretty awesome. It was a really great week for Marlon. And, you know, as we'll talk about later, I think he's going to need another one. Overall, as the nearest defender, he only allowed 2 catches for 19 yards on 7 targets, which resulted in a negative 9.3 target EPA. So really, really nice performance. All of those are per Next Gen Stats.
Excellent stuff. And Humphrey, trailing a particular receiver is not something the Ravens often do. They usually play a strict left cornerback, right cornerback situation, with Averett being the right cornerback. And when Humphrey follows somebody, he's on that side of the field. That's an indication that they're really trying to lock down one receiver with him. You know, there's a lot of different thought about this anyway, is that the right cornerback, left cornerback often makes sense because you want to keep your best corner oftentimes on the other team's number 2 receiver as well. And where you really want to switch up is moving your safety help over to cover their number 1 receiver and help out there. But it certainly worked out in this game in terms of covering Williams. I'll go to one on the offense. It's actually the Chargers pass rush. The rate of 5+ blitzes for the Ravens versus the Chargers, sorry, the Ravens defense, was 29%, which is very low for the Martindale era. And you look at this, the Browns were up somewhere about 19% or something for the game. And I'm thinking, wow, that's a really low number, but that was actually high for the Browns this year that they blitzed that much. So Martindale is a special cat in terms of blitzing a lot. The other thing that was really impressive about this game, or strange, I'll say, is they did it with very little deception. 0 deceptive blitzes, which contain 2 or more of off-ball blitzes, simulated pressures, or stunts. They actually only had 3 off-ball blitzes the whole game, 4 simulated pressures, 0 stunts, which again means they're putting a moratorium on stunts to control the rush lanes and probably keep Herbert under that very contained pressure look. So they had one of the most tame pass rushes of the Martindale era, and Herbert still only threw for 4.4 yards per play.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive defensive performance overall. And I wonder if some of that had to do with the new personnel in, or maybe just simplifying the package overall and just kind of simplify it and do your job sort of deal. So I think maybe both of those played into it, but glad they were able to be so successful. So, all right, my next number, 15 and 2017. You have to go all the way back to week 15 in the 2017 season for the last time that Murray, Freeman, and Bell all scored in the same week. It happened both in 2015, 2016, and 2017, but it hasn't happened since then until this last week when all 3 got into the end zone. It's pretty amazing what the Ravens have been able to accomplish with we'll call them veteran running backs. You know, it's they're very seasoned. So, you know, we'll see if it's sustainable going forward. We got the 2 younger running backs to come in maybe later in the season. You know, Murray's got the injury, so we'll see how much that takes him down. But pretty amazing that they all 3 got in, and really a credit to Roman and the schemes, and to Lamar for the impact he has on defenses.
Yeah, great, great stuff. Did you expect it to be even further back than 2017 that they all scored on the same week? Because I would.
I did, but they actually haven't even been playing that long, a couple of them. They only started in like 2014, but yep.
Interesting stuff. All right, so now we'll turn it over to the Ravens on offense and the Chargers pass rush. The Chargers on 30 plays that resulted in a pass or sack rushed the quarterback 20 times. That's 67% was the percentage the Chargers rushed 5+. It's the second highest this season. Only that weird Denver game where they were kind of throwing run blitzes at every down at the Ravens and rushed 70% of the time, and with greater numbers even, did anybody pressure the Ravens more? It's one of the highest ever since I've been keeping this kind of information. 1.96 was the response to that, is the number of heavy eligible receivers per play. So that's our 6th offensive lineman, tight end, or fullback. So when they use exactly 1 running back every play, they use 1.96 of the tight end fullback OL6. That means they're using 2.04 wide receivers per play, which is very low for the National Football League these days. You know, the most common personnel package is 11, which means you have 3 wide receivers on the field. And the Ravens were certainly not doing that. So very heavy offensive scheme, again, to compensate for their tackles in large measure. And they did a lot of set and chip blocking in this game. We'll leave that for another time.
Yeah, I think it makes sense on both accounts. You know, it makes sense for the defense to try and exploit the Ravens' weakness on the line, and it makes sense for the Ravens to counter and provide support. So I think all that supports, you know, things that make sense given where we are. And so far, I think it's worked out well for the Ravens. So let's keep that going. All right. And showing how well it's worked, 34. That's the number of explosive plays, 20 plus yards. So on Twitter, I saw someone talking about the explosive plays, but only was talking about receptions. And looking at all plays, though, Ravens are tied in first with 34, tied with Las Vegas. That's four run plays, 26 receptions, and four QB scrambles for a total of 34 plays over 20 yards. So a very different offense that we're seeing this year versus the last couple years. Really, you know, kind of a Kansas City-esque type of explosive versus the small chunks just chipping away down the field. And I think that's probably a result of some of how the defenses are playing the Ravens and some of the losses to running back as well.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely like to see them be able to adapt and win a slightly different way. And I mean, there might be something about the numbers there also, because sometimes the explosive play for a run is set at a lower level than the explosive play for a pass. But I like the way you've done it here, that they're all 20s, right?
Yeah, all 20s. I saw someone did that for 15. I'm not really sure really the logic why. They're all offensive plays, so it shouldn't really be discounted. But yeah, nonetheless, I think it's pretty impressive that they're up there. So that's a real sign of really solid offense this year.
Okay. Want to give, first of all, a shout out to at Fox Force Flacco, Fox Force 5, as in we're a fox, a force to be recommended, and there's Flacco of us. So anyway, if you remember Pulp Fiction, that's what that's from. So anyway, a great stat he came up with is that Joe Burrow is making his 17th career start on Sunday versus Baltimore. And under John Harbaugh, the Ravens are 36-3 at home and 58-13 overall versus quarterbacks who've made 25 or fewer career starts. Only home losses have been to Mayfield in 2019, Trubisky in 2017, Bortles in 2015. Outstanding piece of information. We'll give you a Twitter shout out if you want to supply us a statistic for this show. Dan and I have a lot of fun with this, but it's always nice to have new information from the outside. And this was a really good one, so I want to make sure it got on.
Yeah, he's been impressive. And I think, you know, a lot of that comes down to defense coordinators loving to throw anything that the quarterbacks haven't seen before. So they'll be testing Burrow for sure. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see that chess matchup. So,
yeah.
All right. My next stat is looking ahead again. It's going to be one of the key things in the matchup, 47.47%. That's the percentage of the air yard targets going to Ja'Marr Chase. So that's huge. That's the second highest. He's a huge part of the Cincinnati offense, and it'll be interesting to see whether Humphrey shadows him like we saw last week, or consistent with that approach, or if they'll stick to the sidelines. I know they have three good wide receivers, but that's a pretty significant chunk of the offense. He's doing that despite an average separation of 1.9 yards, so well below the league average, and still catching nearly 66% of his targets. So he's a beast in contested catches or with the defender close. So just because Humphrey's there doesn't mean it's going to stop him. He's also been improving his yards by an average of 6.5 yards after catch, which is pretty significant too.
Do you have an ADOT for him for that?
I don't know.
Because that's a very high catch rate for a deep receiver. And my immediate reaction to that is, wow, that's really amazing. And contested catches certainly be a part of that. But even throwing the deep ball, that implies some accuracy for Burrow as well.
Yeah, it's I know Burrow's completion over expected is relatively high, but I don't know which one of them you give credit to between the two. So, but it's pretty impressive. So, well, it'll be a big challenge for whatever defender lines up against him.
I got a little bit of that in this next number, 2.64 and 4.3%. 2.64 is Burrow's time to throw, which is tied for fifth fastest in the NFL per next gen. And what we've seen from Martindale this year so far is a willingness to have a hands-off kind of a pass rush where they really slow it down and don't use as much deception, don't try and get as fast pressures as often. It'd be interesting kind of a balance between trying to decide, do you want to really beat the Cincinnati offensive line for fast pressures because they've got problems, or do you want to try and hold out on Burrow with more in coverage since he gets the ball rid of the ball pretty quickly. So it'll be a interesting choice there. They run almost out of 11, everything out of 11. So we're not going to see a lot of four cornerback packages, I think, which is good for the Ravens in this game. And they also, I picked up on the 4.3% expected completion difference, which is another thing that if you have a quarterback with a very high accuracy, you obviously, one of the things you want to try and do is move him off the spot, of course, has value, but also you want more in coverage to try and slow him down a little bit as well. So definitely competing philosophies on how to deal with Burrow this weekend.
Yeah, I think, you know, maybe a little bit of both just to keep mixing it up on what he's expecting. I think that could be key, is pretend or, you know, fake pressure and drop back and, you know, drop back and then get Tavon blitzing, things like that, where it really tricks what he's seeing. You know, can't get a quick read. Maybe that'll play in.
All right, Dan, as always, great to do this show with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you on Twitter.
Yeah, DP Reese and then the number 8. Hit me up on Twitter. Happy to talk anything analytics, Ravens, whatever. So, you know, love talking football. So just reach out to me.
Hey folks, if you're interested in doing a 25 years podcast, also hit me up on that. Still looking for folks to do more of those. Again, not looking for the Mount Rushmore Ravens or some of the more hackneyed topics that have been talked about many times. But if you have a trend, a game, a particular player you really liked from the past, maybe that's not one of the all time greats in particular, that'd be great. And we'd love to hear from you on that. Dan, thanks again. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, likewise. It was great.
Talk to you next time on Film Study.